This week's episode of Greetings from Storybrooke is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/storybrooke. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Again, that link is audibletrial.com/storybrooke.
I'm sorry, Henry. It makes sense for us to dream about the things we've lost and the things we hope for. Like your father being alive, or your mother coming to find you. But eventually, you'll find new things to dream about.
Greetings from Storybrooke. I'm Bill Meeks.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And this is a podcast that lets the ocean hear you. We also chat about Once Upon a Tizime. I have it written here. I forgot about that.
I distracted you with my seashell noise. It was good, though.
It was pretty good. How are you doing, Anne-Marie?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. And we're here, as usual, to talk about the latest episode of ABC's...
Hit series. It's a hit series.
Hit series, Once Upon a Time. I looked at the numbers from this week. I guess that's a spoiler for later on.
Spoiler alert. But also a little hyper tonight. Pardon us. There's been a lot of coffee going on today.
Yeah, definitely. Just one thing we wanted to address real quick up front here before we get into the main episode discussion. It was brought to our attention that some people in the Once Upon a Time fan community were going out there and tweeting out to the creators and everything about the whole Sleeping Warrior controversy. Or not controversy, but I guess this makes it controversial.
This does make it controversial.
Plot point. Basically saying, please don't introduce LGBT characters into the show because it's supposed to be a family-friendly show. And I just thought it was really important for us to say up right here, up front. And I think this was pretty obvious from our discussion of it and everything. But we don't think introducing LGBT characters into the show makes it unfamily friendly.
Not in the slightest.
To think like that, it kind of feels a little backward. We're not pointing people out. We're not naming names or anything.
We're not starting fights. We're just stating our position.
Yeah, we just want to make sure everyone who listens to this podcast knows how we feel about those issues, and we're very supportive.
We're very supportive of
our brothers and sisters in the gay community. And if you don't like that, sorry. It was great having you around.
Maybe
we'll see you on a round table or something. But we just wanted to make sure we didn't want to start any issues, but we wanted to make sure everyone knew where we came from when it came to that.
And it's
stuff.
It's a big topic, so. Mm-hmm. And we don't typically go, the serious route, obviously.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to make it be known because it was brought to our attention.
Yeah. We got reached out to, or they reached out to us saying that they were bothered by it and asked if we could do anything to address it. And we thought this might be the best way to go about it.
This was the best, most PC? Mm-hmm. PC way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to, put out how we felt about it. And, we won't, in any future interactions with anyone in the community, we won't be shy.
We won't bring it up or...
We won't be shy about how we feel about it. But, again, we're not trying to start a war
Starting a war.
Okay. So, enough of the serious. Let's get into the episode discussion. You want to hit us up with that episode summary, Anne-Marie?
We find out that Pan knew the Dark One beforehand. Then they had a fight, and Pan went to Neverland. Emma and family look for a way out. Luckily, Neil leaves some coconuts about. A father and son steal some squid ink and dab it, but nothing saves Henry in this week's episode. Nasty habits.
Nothing saves Henry.
Isn't that what I said?
Yeah, I think you said Henry. But he was.
I haven't been reading very long, so I apologize.
No, that's fine. You kind of got thrown that right when you sat down to record.
I read it 3 minutes ago, and now here it is.
So,
yes.
Just right up front, what'd you think of the episode?
I loved it.
You loved it?
I loved it. I tweeted that I loved it this morning because I was all but throwing violent things at the TV last night because I had to work until approximately 11.
Throwing violent things or throwing things violently? There's a subtle difference. Throwing
probably
violent
both.
Things violently?
Yes. I went to the kitchen. I had a knife. I looked at it. We had a moment. I put it back. No, I tried for 45 minutes to get it to replay, and I was having some major technical difficulties. And while things were buffering, I was falling asleep, so it definitely wasn't working out. Thankfully, I had it watched by 8:15 this morning.
Yeah. But, yeah, such
it's amazing, you?
Oh, I really
enjoyed
it,
too. Like, there was not a down moment.
It definitely, I think it really kind of solidified the it felt like almost the end of the first act.
Yeah.
Of the Neverland story.
Yeah.
Which means, that we got a lot of things addressed. It seemed almost like a checklist of things that needed addressed and things that we'll be addressing the rest of the season.
And done well.
Mm-hmm.
Because
a lot
of times when we get our answer episodes, they're a little laggy, especially flashback ones. I know you don't seem to feel that as much, but I sometimes do.
Yeah.
That sometimes the flashbacks are like, murder. Which is weird because I used to be the one who was like, flashbacks, more pretty dresses. But yeah, like it was, you just kept going. I, in fact, watched it 3 times today.
Nice.
So a little.
See, I only watched it twice. I feel like such a slacker now.
You are a slacker.
But one of the things that I thought was really, really interesting was them really, putting out on Front Street there the relationship between Pan and Rumple. And, basically a rough history of what went down.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Definitely more to be said. But
Yeah. But they basically kind of outlined that they knew each other when they were kids and something major went down. And then they're where we see them in this episode.
Basically, they haven't seen each other in, this is now their third interaction, basically.
Yeah. Or that we've seen.
Period.
The third era
of their
Rumple.
Relationship. Pan has aged nothing. Rumple getting up there. That was fun. God, but, do you have a theory?
Yes, I do have a theory. Here's what I think is going to – what the backstory is going to be.
Okay.
Basically, something happens with Pan and Rumple when they're both kids and they make a plan to escape to Neverland together.
How do they know about Neverland? Is this not part of the plan?
Actually, it comes up a little bit later
in
my notes.
Sorry.
But they make a plan to go to Neverland, and something happens to where a Pan can go, but he has to what's the word I'm looking for?
Screw over Rumple?
Yeah, screw over. Yes. I was trying to think of a more genteel way to say it.
I don't think there really was one.
And basically gets to Neverland without him. And I think what he does to screw over Rumple, I guess I'll say it again.
Say it.
he makes his father, Rumple's father, appear to be a coward.
Oh.
I'm thinking, one, that can tie things together, and two, it feeds into some other stuff I'll talk about.
Oh,
yeah.
You have other stuff?
I have other stuff to talk about in a minute concerning this point G there. You'll see.
Reading ahead. Okay.
But that's my theory to what their backstory will be revealed to be, but I guess we'll see in the next few weeks. Yeah.
You've been known to be wrong before.
I have.
No news trucks. I know that Belle is a vision of Rumple, Dark One, because he's not Rumple anymore. He's the Dark One.
Yeah.
She's evil. I don't know if you notice. It's all very subtle, but it's in her phrasing of things.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, the prophecy says that Henry will be the undoing. No, I yelled at the TV. It says the boy. Currently, we are on an island with umpteen boys. So, I mean,
we've never had 100% confirmation that the vision of Belle is actually a manifestation of Rumple's, subconscious.
Right, no, we haven't, and that's why I'm saying, and then there was something was very not nice. Oh, it was at the end where she's like, look, you have something to live for now, but fully knowing that that means he's going to kill Henry.
Yeah.
And then he sends her away and the look comes over his face.
Well, I mean, we even saw in this episode that not even Rumple's kind of perception of, his hallucinations or whatever can really be trusted because he mistakes Neil as one of those hallucinations.
Exactly.
So I don't know. And I mean, Overall, the Bell scenes just feel like they needed to get some exposition done with Rumple, and they needed someone for him to talk to do it.
And she's perfect for that.
But I do think it would be interesting if they kind of circled back around and made it a plot point. Maybe it's part of Pan's manipulation, or maybe...
See, I was thinking, you know, that, too.
Someone above Pan. You know?
Oh, we can get into that one, too.
Yeah, yeah, that's more of a spoiler thing.
Spoiler! So, this is you.
But yeah,
actually, it's sort of the same thing.
The Bell episodes did fall kind of flat.
Seems, yes.
But, you know, something I really did notice in this episode was Pan's his real talent is his ability to manipulate people and mm-hmm. He doesn't trick people.
Right.
He gives them 100% the truth and the facts and what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it lacks just enough context to where he can get what he wants.
He can swing it how he wants it.
Yeah, exactly like he does in this episode with telling Neil about the curse and just vague enough to make him distrust Trump.
Not the curse, the prophecy.
Or the prophecy, yeah. Yeah, which I thought was very interesting. And how long does that squid ink last anyway? What, like 15 minutes?
No, I'm going with maybe like 2 hours or
yeah.
so.
Oh, it just didn't seem crazy long, but it did paralyze them, right?
It paralyzed. Yeah. Like they couldn't even.
Yeah,
like,
and I know that's come up before. Squid ink, wasn't that was that how they got Korra?
Possibly.
Because I know they found it in Rumple's cell right. in the castle last season.
Yeah. I think it had to do with Korra.
Yeah.
It definitely had to.
And he did say that a mermaid retrieved it for him, which...
did he?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm wondering if maybe...
That was actually one of my notes. Where are the mermaids? I'm like, if we're in the water, giant, where are the mermaids?
But I'm wondering if maybe Rumple's last trip to Neverland or something, maybe that's where he got that squid ink they used last season.
Possibly, because I don't imagine squids are terribly common in, you know.
Especially magical squids.
Exactly. Well, I'd imagine they're all magical in this world. Imagine magic. Okay, so the scenes between Rumple and Neil are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's the actors, it's the writing, it's the performance.
Mm-hmm.
There's emotion. There's raw emotion. And, you know, the acting background in me just takes over watching those. And mm-hmm. I just, like, ooze jealousy of those scenes because they're just so intense. And that's just, like, a dream.
Yeah, well, they all put me in mind of the scene in Neil's apartment between him and Rumple from last year. I think it was in Manhattan.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, just that one scene where they're talking and Rumple's trying to convince him, you know, I could turn you back into a boy. We can go pick up right where we left off and everything. They have that kind of feeling to them.
Yeah.
Which is cool because we really haven't got to see that dynamic since Manhattan.
Right. Well, they haven't really talked.
Yeah. I think just once in the town when him and Rumple and Lacey were going around.
They were beating people.
I forget. Was it Whale?
It was Whale. It was Dr. Whale. Bringing it back. But yeah, like, I just love, like, you can tell that Neil surprised Rumple with his determination of, no, really, I'll do whatever needs to be done to rescue my son. His knowledge and use of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not magical, but he knows what and how to use it.
Yeah.
And my favorite really was, oh, and Robin Hood's paid up to you, basically. I was like, that's good. And he didn't question it.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
Yeah, it did seem, you know, Neil was kind of running around Rumple a little bit. Rumple was just kind of like, what? What's going on here? You know?
Exactly. And I loved the, well, if you want to prove to me that, you know, you're not going to do anything, give me the dagger. I want the dagger. And really, that's what you ask for.
Yeah. Yeah. And Neil definitely knows.
He knows the buttons.
He knows the score.
Exactly.
If anyone knows the score about Rumpelstiltskin and, you know, what drives him and what can take him down, it's his son, you know, for sure. Okay. One thing that I really kind of bothered me, though, was I really think Neil should have trusted Rumple. And it made me think a little bit less of Neil that he didn't. For a couple of reasons. One, because I really think that if you know, if he had, that Rumpel would have followed through and, you know, given his life to save Henry. No problems. Now there's been some doubt introduced into it, mainly because Neil didn't have faith in his dad.
Well,
now,
guess what his-
Neil, we know, is very hyper aware of the fact that he's living in a fairy tale and he knows what kind of story he's in. So he knows that having faith in his dad would make his dad do great things. That's the kind of story he's living
in. But his dad had no faith in him, which we saw earlier because he didn't ask the question. And if he even said, if you'd have asked me, I'd have come home.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, he's got unresolved daddy issues. And
this is true, but I mean, it's the difference between, you know, being a child and an adult a little bit, too. I mean, I could see that hurting and scarring a child, but after everything that Neil has lived through...
and he's never been proven good by his father.
But I mean, since they got back together, since they found each other again, he really hasn't given him a fair shot, I don't think, either. And I mean, if
there's been hundreds of years here.
But if nothing else, I think that he should have trusted Rumpel just because Pan was trying to get him not to trust Rumpel. And if Pan's as bad a guy as Neil and everyone else has said, why would you do anything that Pan wanted? You knew Pan wanted you to do, and it was very obvious that Pan wanted this to happen, for them to separate. And as soon as they did, guess who got Henry back?
All right, I'll give you that one.
Pan.
I'll give you that one.
So I'm just saying, Neil, buddy, you let me down a little bit. As much as I like these scenes, let me down a little bit as a character. You should have been smarter than that.
Team Neil. So is the sleeping spell a sign of the Dark One?
Like, how do you mean?
Well, when Felix comes back... And it's like, you know, I lost Bay. He's like, why didn't you get him? He's like, I tried, but then the Centaurs were down with a sleeping spell. And they're like, the Dark One. It was very Newman. I mean, and then he comes and uses it again, which also confused me. Why did we knock Henry out?
Well, I think it was just like a general blanket, like knock everyone out.
But Pan wasn't knocked out.
But Pan has some pretty powerful magic going on, too.
I'm pretty sure that if Rumpel would have, like... sent his magical powers and thought, don't get Henry. It wouldn't have gotten Henry.
Well, yeah.
No.
Maybe he was trying to finish the job he started on that swing last season.
Oh, and this is why he shouldn't be trusted.
Hey, he didn't finish. He didn't finish. No, but something that actually, dealing with sleeping and dreaming and all of that, that kind of occurred to me, they kind of addressed a little bit the nature of Neverland and Peter Pan himself in this episode. Just a couple of lines that stuck out to me. Peter said that Neverland used to be a place where new dreams formed. When he's talking to Henry, he said Neverland used to be a place where new dreams formed, and you can make it that again, Henry. And he also says in the flashback that boys visited there in their dreams, and now he was bringing them
physically
there, where they could never leave. So I'm wondering if maybe Neverland isn't the land of dreams, and maybe it's tied into the whole dream dimension that people put under sleeping curses go into, like Aurora said.
I was about to say, but then you have three people on that island who have been there. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just haven't explored for far enough.
Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe it might be the same land. Maybe since they're there in
reality,
their physical bodies and everything, that it when they go to sleep, they don't travel there. Plus, we haven't really seen anybody sleep yet.
No, they really haven't slept in a very long time. They're getting – well, no, we saw them sleep in the first episode.
Oh, did we?
Briefly. It was a nap. Cat nap, maybe. But second episode.
That also kind of makes me think, because we had talked, I think, last week or the week before about, you know, the last time Aurora tried to find someone through that sleep dimension, how she saw someone there.
It was too scary.
Yeah, too scary. Which is making me think, tie back into my whole
big bad
over the big bad
shadow
theories.
It's the shadow.
Exactly. But it also kind of made me wonder.
Especially with the spoiler.
Yes. Spoiler casting news. But it also kind of made me wonder if – you know how the first season and a little bit the second season, but mostly the first season, it was aware – you slowly became aware of Rumple's big master plan and how he was manipulating all these events. It seems in this episode that Pan was really behind a lot of those events, like Bay being pulled away, because this sowed the seeds, the major seeds for Bay's distrust of his dad,
right,
which eventually led to him falling through that hole into London. And, you know, then he also he says in this episode to Neil, did you really leave here of your own volition, or did I let you leave? And aren't you back here like you never left? So if it wasn't for Pan, Henry would have never been born. So I'm wondering, maybe Pan is could be the big bad.
Who is controlling this?
But, you know, it seems everything that Rumple did, Pan was probably actually behind in the grand scheme of things, which is going to make it really interesting when they bring back in the whole backstory between Rumple and Pan when they were boys.
Yeah.
Or whatever,
that,
too.
And I'm really looking forward to next week's, just based on that preview. And that's all I'll say about that until we get there. So, bye, Tank. It's been real. You never go in without an exit plan.
You think bye, Tank, or just...
Oh, no, she'll be back. But it was just like... And I thoroughly enjoyed Emma's struggle to say, Tinkerbell. Oh, you can call me Tank. Yep, yeah, not much better. Not much better.
Yeah, but that was kind of a line that was repeated a few times over in this episode too.
It all came back to Pan though, because Pan taught Neil and Neil taught Emma, and Pan must have taught Tink. I want to know that relationship because they trust each other.
Well, the thing is, we haven't really seen them interact at all yet.
At all.
So it's hard to read that relationship, it's going to be like the traditional relationship. Well, it seems like it kind of will be.
Well, it seems very
although
traditional.
Although maybe if Tink had a crush on Peter, though, that would be kind of creepy considering she's like twice his age. No, she's not that old. She's not that old.
No.
She's like 10 years older than him, though. And he's like 17, so that's kind of creepy.
It's not that creepy, dude. But it is sort of in the traditional, because if she gets along with Pan, but she also gets along with Hook. And she did work for Hook a bit in the classic tale. So I don't know. But bye, Tink. See you soon.
We shall see.
We shall see.
Also, thanks to Tink, we have it officially 100% confirmed on screen, not just in a tweet from one of the creators, that Greg and Tamara are as dead can be. I believe it was subtly referenced that, you know, bones were picked clean.
There was a lot of blood.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically, they're dead. We might see... I mean, I'm sure they could always bring back Greg's shadow or something if they wanted to. I don't see why they would.
I don't see... What's he going to
really
know?
Especially if they made a point to say in episode, oh, yeah, his body was torn to bits.
There wasn't anything there worthwhile.
So, Rippa, Greg, and Tamara, you were a plot point that's probably best...
Gone.
Dead in the ground.
Dead and decayed. So, the coconut star map.
I thought you were going to say carcass. I was like, we just covered that.
No, the coconut star map. How cool was that?
That was pretty cool.
That was really cool. But those cave drawings can't be nothing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that.
Which we did get listener feedback after which I will be addressing, I believe, on the interwebs, correct? Mm-hmm. That addressed it a bit.
Yeah.
But just to bring it in now, yeah, they were very specific, and I felt they were showing very specific things. That, of course, I didn't get a chance to slow motion through on my three watches. But I want to explore that more.
Yeah, well, that seems almost like it might be something fun to come back to throughout the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know some listeners out there, I know there are a lot of people who like comics. If you remember the series 52 from a few years back.
Oh, for the love.
Basically, in the first episode of 52, at the end of the issue, they go into basically a laboratory or a little hideout place of this guy named Rip Hunter. And there's these two chalkboards with all sorts of events written on them. And over the course of the series, you see all those events play out and how they tie in together and everything. So I'm guessing maybe the cave walls might end up being something like that. Rip Hunter's chalkboards is what they were in 52. But, you know, just something that foreshadowed a lot of stuff, but it's not really apparent until you see that stuff happen actually in the show. So that could be pretty interesting. And it'll also be interesting to see if the coconut star maps are what gets them home.
Well, especially after Pan says to... excuse me, Neil, that he let him go.
Yeah, that or basically it implied that he let him
Implied that he let him go, but that could just be messing with his head.
And that also could just be because Pan seems very ego-driven, and that could be him, even Pan, lying to himself to kind of...
Like, I let you go, but I brought you back.
I could have stopped you if I wanted to, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sent Felix after you.
Okay, so something Pan says at the end here, I was just wondering if what you think about it. He said the game is about to change.
Yeah.
How?
I don't know, but he said he was going to, like, reset everything.
Mm-hmm.
So has he forgotten the other players in the game a little bit?
Well, yeah, I'm sure those players are involved.
Also, sort of with that. Where did Neil go at the end? Is he with, like, trapped by Lost Boys, or was he, like, sent away? Because if so, that makes it more of a game.
I had a feeling they were kind of sending him away. They were just, like, they might have said it blatantly in the episode, and
I missed it.
I missed it. But it seemed like they were taking him out, you know, far away from where they were.
Out into a field, blindfolded, spun around 12 times.
And then letting him go.
It's like initiation. Sorry. Mm.
But I'm wondering what they mean. I'm assuming it probably has something to do with the fact that Henry has kind of officially joined up with the Lost Boys.
With his
now.
Horrible dancing.
Yeah, yeah. That seemed like a really sudden shift too. Even though he's been there with them for a couple episodes now, it seemed like no, I'm not going to. Okay.
Oh, I heard this pretty music. Let me dance.
Oh, wait a second. I had a dream that my dad was coming to save me and he wasn't. Oh, well, I guess I'll be evil now.
Why are they all assuming he's dead? I know he was shot. I know he fell through a portal. Well, guess what? All of you went through a stinking portal.
All of them were shot.
No, but he's a survivor. He survived how many hundreds of years on his own? And a portal's going to lead somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, unless there are realms that are completely and 300% uninhabited, somebody's going to see him. So, I don't know. That really bothers me that no one thinks he can survive. I mean, they may have not have thought, you know, he'd be in Neverland, but thinking he's dead, I think that's just unreasonable.
I don't know. Maybe if he had a little faith in his dad, other people would have a little faith in him. That's all I'm saying.
So Swanfire. I knew the moment I saw him, I never stopped loving him. Swoon.
Temporary. Negative. Temporary.
No. 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 Swanfire.
But didn't she also kind of admit that it was kind of – it wasn't a sure
thing? She thinks he's dead.
Well, I mean, even – didn't she kind of say that she was mad about that she hadn't stopped loving him I felt like she kind of felt like they didn't have 100% chance of making it even if he had survived because, you know, as far as she thinks he's dead.
I didn't get that impression.
And I thought it was really nice when Hook, you know, comforted her and everything was like, you know, it's me and Bay knew each other.
I'm going to leave my choice words at the door because they're not acceptable on this podcast, but you know what they are.
Yes.
Team Henry.
I'm aware.
I have a team.
I thought you were putting that in the doc. How did our whole shipping war shake out?
I didn't count it because I had to get ready for work. Hold on. Let me count. But I think it was in my favor. I'm pretty sure it was in Swanfire's favor.
Okay, so we just took a second for Anne-Marie to tally up the votes here. And we have it 16 Swanfire.
Swanfire!
And 10 Captain Swan.
And one option number three.
And one option number three, which was neither or both or something.
Neither. We had a neither and a both, so.
You know, I'm really disappointed in all of you out there for not voting for Captain Swan, which is obviously my preferred shipping choice.
Swanfire.
I don't know. I guess we'll talk about it a little bit once we get into the news section here.
Swanfire.
Let's talk about it in a minute. But overall, let's see here. I didn't even think about a random... say it out loud.
Coconuts.
Okay, yes.
It's usually his thing.
Out of 17 coconuts, how many coconuts would you give this episode?
16 and one star.
16 and one star. Why?
Because it was phenomenal, but there's always room for improvement.
I would agree with that estimation. It was definitely 16 or 16 and a half coconuts.
Oh.
Guaranteed. A very strong episode. A lot of good stuff. And made me really excited for what comes next, too.
Exactly. It's nice to have that build up. And y'all need to be telling your friends because, well, news.
We'll get to that in a minute. But first off, we want to thank Audible for sponsoring this week's episode of the show. And for you, the listeners of Greetings from Storybrooke, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out the service. Now, this is great because you can throw it on your iPhone, your Zoom. You can listen to it on your computer. I believe they have a web player.
You can listen to it on coconuts.
Possibly even on coconuts. I think you would have to hook them up to a potato for a battery or something. we always like to give you a recommendation. And this week, my recommendation is The Power of Myth, Programs 1 through 6 with Joseph Campbell and Bill Moyers. Now, this is something, how I was saying earlier, Neil knows what kind of story he's in. There is basically one, it's called the monomyth, that all stories are based from. It's also called the hero's journey. And this, the power of myth, the guy who kind of coined the phrase and coined the plot, or, you know, kind of broke out and studied the plot of the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell. It's a really in-depth interview with him about that whole process. So if you're interested in storytelling, how fairy tales fit into how we see the human experience, definitely recommend it.
I am going to go a little more light and fluffy for you.
Yeah, mine was a little academic.
You were really like her. It was really hard. I wanted to find a Pied Piper, but they were all just really me. Mm-hmm. But I did find Once Upon a Time Tales.
Yeah, you know what? That is one thing. We never even addressed the whole Peter Pan being Pied Piper thing.
It was the double piece.
Yeah.
It was making somebody be another character and having it not just Rumple be everybody.
Yeah.
I think that's what I saw from it. End scene. But Once Upon a Time Tales has Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Thumb. We haven't met him yet.
Nope.
Little Red Riding Hood. Three Little Bears. Well, the Three Bears, whatever. Rumpelstiltskin. Waha. Peter Rabbit. And many other classics.
Like Emma and Neil knock over a convenience store. That old fairy tale.
Why, yes. That is a fantastic fairy tale. No, Once Upon a Charm Bracelet. No.
Sounds really good. And the links to both of those recommendations will be in our show notes at greetingsfromstorybrooke.com. And if you want to download one of those or any book of your choice, really, for your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/storybrooke. Again, that's audibletrial.com/storybrooke for your free audiobook. Oh, we don't mention this a lot, but you can also, if you want to, just go to greetingsfromstorybrooke.com. There's a banner right at the top of the website.
Oh, yeah.
That you can just click through there, and we get credit for that, too. So if you want to try
while
it out.
While you're at the website,
exactly.
Getting the podcast, leaving the feedback.
Yeah, give a little clicky-clicky. Get a free audiobook. And we want to thank Audible.
Thank you, Audible.
And for sponsoring this week's episode of Greetings from Storybrooke. Now, on to the news. News. Okay, first the ratings, as always. Okay, and I'm going to read this straight from Entertainment Weekly's website. Even with Fox's animation block and repeats, CBS and ABC Entertainment shows were all pretty low, with only Once Upon a Time managing a mere 2.0 rating among adults 18 to 49. Series low for the fantasy hit.
How are we at a series low?
I don't know.
It's doing, like, it's so good.
Well, I mean, they kind of imply here, too, that it everything was down across the board.
There was football.
Oh.
Don't start
football.
Power to the football, but not when it's against my wants.
Yeah.
Like.
But, I mean, that kind of explains.
But we were the hot. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. We were the highest of the non-sports shows.
Which I think has been pretty consistent.
It has been
the
very consistent.
Too.
So when making the choice, people are at least choosing once.
And I'd imagine once, you know, DVR numbers are released in the next day or two, it'll probably bump it up like it has been doing the past few weeks.
It has been bumping it substantially. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you got the husband watching the football and you got the wife not being able to watch her once.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sit down together Tuesday night and watch it. It's a beautiful thing.
Okay, so you had some...
There was a couple
Casting announcements here.
This one was sent to us by, forgive me if I mess up your name, Michael Lucero.
Lucero.
Like,
yeah.
We have Rumple's father.
Mm.
And he has been cast just recently.
The Dark One's daddy.
The Dark One's daddy. The Dark Daddy. Not on my website. It is British actor Stephen Lord.
I'm not sure if I know him from anything.
The side-by-side doesn't look very related to me. So I'm
no,
sure.
No, but he might look Stephen Lord might look closer to the whoever they get to play Little Rumpel. Little Rumpel.
Oh, Little Rumpel. He's Little like a Rumpel. Rap star, Little Rumpel.
No, but it should be interesting.
Should be good.
And this was actually part of the reason that theory kind of came to me that I mentioned earlier, because yeah. I knew that we were getting Rumpel's dad at some point this season, so I'd assume we were going to see why he was a coward.
It's actually very soon. I feel like everything I keep hearing is like episode 6. Like episode 6 seems like it's going to be monumental. Mm-hmm. So if you're not
so
watching
that's two it, episodes. That's,
yeah, because this was 4.
Yeah.
Halloween.
Halloween.
Halloween episode.
Last year's Halloween episode was pretty major, too. We found out who Dr. Whale was. And
right.
Yeah.
So maybe that's well, – it kind of works.
Cora called her zombies.
Called her zombies. But, yeah, that sort of makes sense then.
Yeah, but
– Because
the
I think
other
we'll get mermaids then, too. Sorry.
The
yes.
other casting news was actually way more exciting. Too.
So more exciting. And I can't believe they just like randomly released this in the middle of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, Marilyn Manson is going to be the Shadow.
Yes.
How awesome is that? Like, it's just the voice, but he has the perfect creepy, scary nightmare voice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, when I heard this, what popped into my head was his cover of This Is Halloween.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Nightmare Before Christmas, because they kind of kept the instrumentation kind of the same to where it's kind of like nice and innocent and sing-songy. Tender loveling everywhere. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I will say I have seen way more of Marilyn Manson than I ever wanted to.
Didn't you see him in concert?
I did see him in concert.
And, well, anybody who knows about yeah. Marilyn Manson concerts know you will always see more of him than you should.
Yeah, but I am very excited to see him on Once Upon a Time. That should
hear
that,
him.
Hear him on Once Upon a Time.
It's better than seeing him on Once Upon a
Time. I guess
then
so.
It wouldn't be a family
Although
show.
It is kind of funny that he's on once this season, and his ex-girlfriend,
yes,
Rose McGowan.
Yes, that's what I pointed out. I was like, we had there. Rose McGowan last season, and now he's on. Maybe there was like something in her, you know, contract. They couldn't be on the same time. Were they married?
I don't know if they were or not.
They were together for a while.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not together anymore.
No,
I
no,
remember
no.
researching
no, no,
Rose
no.
when she was going to be playing young Cora, and seeing that they were not together anymore.
They were together during the shiny 90s, as I like to call them, when everything had like glitter and sequins.
The McG 90s.
The McG 90s. AKA.
This should be cool. And he's basically voicing the Shadow, kind of the power behind Neverland, right?
Yeah, I think so. I just knew that it said he was going to be the Shadow. There wasn't much to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was, they confirmed it to Rolling Stone, and everybody took Rolling Stone and spun it.
Basically, he's going to be voicing that Shadow, Peter Shadow, that we've seen flying around. Okay,
yeah. So that's why him being the big bad would be phenomenal.
Have you ever gotten the impression that maybe that Shadow is pulling the boy around versus the boy pulling the Shadow around?
Yes.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, I think that would be perfect for in the dream world.
Well, that's also kind of why I think that maybe Rumpel's Shadow is eventually going to betray him somehow, too.
Yeah, that whole Rumpel's Shadow thing.
It feels like the Shadows are kind of
that's
not necessarily working for their masters.
No, not at all. We'll see. Rumpel sent his Shadow away.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, go, scamper.
But with
free.
The dagger.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah.
It
was smart. If Shadows are as autonomous as it seems like, maybe it was dumb.
Right.
But finally, let's see. I would like to mention that all these will be up on the website, greetingsfromstorybrooke.com, in the show notes. Finally, we do have the promo for this upcoming episode. What do you have to say about this?
I love young Captain Hook.
Yeah, young Captain Hook.
Though
looks,
it is kind of funny watching this.
There's a flying pirate ship,
which is fun. There's almost always a flying pirate ship. It's Peter Pan.
Well,
Neverland.
It was good to finally see in the show.
Yes.
And it appears that it might be the ship that young Hook was on back in the day.
Right.
And
we learn about how he becomes – well, we know how he becomes Hook, but how he becomes a pirate.
Yeah, and it looks like he might have had sort of a run-in with Peter Pan somewhere along the way too. And also he's totally making out with Emma Swan in this. That's all I'm going to say. And Charmian's like, stay away from my daughter, which I thought was kind of funny. And then obviously the response from Hook would be –
Swanfire.
No, would be, I'm going to tell everyone about your infected cut.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Which we have yet to address in two episodes. So let's just go there real quick for a moment. Charming. Jude, just tell them.
I can definitely see where he's coming from because
he doesn't want to take the attention.
Well, he kind of figures he's dead already. So better to just, you know, be silent and stoic about it and push through and try and save his grandson before he kicks it. So
Do you think they're really going to kill him off?
I don't know. I think, honestly,
at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if they do kill him.
Well, the thing is, Pan said that you won't have grandparents, I think. Yeah, I think that was the exact line. Basically,
that he'd be an orphan.
But I believe he specifically mentioned taking out the grandparents. So if they kill Charming, they're going to figure out some way to kill Snow, too. Because I don't see those two. Just because of what's happening off screen. I don't see one of those two dying and the other one staying on the show. Plus what Mary Margaret was saying this episode about how I don't know how I could go on.
But I don't know how the show can go on without – like they're the – eh.
I think that definitely they've been, you know, the impetuous for the show up until this point. But I think definitely by the time the Neverland arc wraps, it could be moving to a place where, you know – Emma really becomes – well, I mean, Emma's always been the driving force for the show. But, I mean, she might end up becoming
Swan
the
– on fire.
She might end up becoming the driving force for the plot as well, where
right,
before she's kind of just been there to facilitate the plot and, you know, step in as the savior in a couple of extreme instances.
We'll see.
But we shall see. Yeah, but they're totally making out. So Captain Swan coming next week to a screen near you.
Bleah.
Okay, now we should get into some listener feedback, of which there was a lot of it concerning the shipping.
Yes.
The shipping issue. But if you want to leave us feedback, we always love hearing from you, especially right after the episode's aired. You can email us greetingsfromstorybrooke@gmail.com. You can tweet us @GFStorybrooke. Our Facebook is facebook.com/greetingsfromstorybrooke. Oh, very active over there.
We've been very active over on the Facebook,
which is fun. I love
you popping
just,
over
you know,
every now and then.
Yeah, I just pop in, throughout the workday, and I'm like, oh, someone left a comment. Yay!
He really does do the yay.
I do. And then
voicemail,
which we love, and guarantees you a spot on the show, which we didn't get any this week.
Wah, wah,
boo.
Wah.
But it's 424-274-2352. That's 424-274-2352. And first off, why don't you read this epic tweet we got?
Had an epic tweet. Like, we were just sitting there. We're just like, that is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is from @Fee.
Which is @PH and then 6 E's.
Otherwise known as Joanne McConnell.
McConnell.
Sorry. Hey, didn't she write the letter last week? Or was that for Wonderland?
I don't remember.
Possibly. Okay, anyway. Neil and Emma's story involves a crime he committed in Phoenix, which is where she did time. Their ship name is a bird and fire. Phoenix is a mythical firebird that burns out and rises from the ashes. Swan fire will rise from the ashes and burn on forever.
This was epic, and it almost turned me over to the Swan fire crowd.
That was phenomenal.
It was great. It was so well thought out. We loved it. We just immediately, when it came through, we pulled it aside.
Copy and paste.
Actually, the screenshot was 17 minutes after it was posted that we sent over to the email, so we would definitely have it. Okay, and especially because if you didn't know, we're doing a podcast just on Wonderland. It's coming through on this feed, but it's also coming through on iTunes and everything as Greetings from Wonderland. But we have a guest on every week, and this week our guest is going to be my old college roommate, Jason George, JG. And he actually wrote a comment in on
Facebooks.
Yeah, on the Facebooks this week. And he said, just generally talking about this week's episode, great episode. I don't understand Rumpel's war paint, though.
You're not alone.
The Lost Boys remind me of the Children of the Corn, especially Felix. Like any minute I expected him to say, Outlander, we have your woman. Except in this case, it would be son. And then hashtag Swanfire forever. Forever.
He was copying me. It's cool.
No, but I did read this earlier today, and when I was rewatching the episode this evening, I noticed that basically it was a mask. He felt he had to look like a monster in order to have the strength to face Pan. So he was putting the paint on as a mask. It was kind of, it was said halfway between Belle and halfway between him.
Right.
But that was the basic gist of it.
Yeah. Is that why it needed to be in all caps and red?
Well, I just wanted to differentiate it from his message. But and we're going to very much enjoy having JG on the Wonderland podcast good. This weekend. So.
Shall I?
Speaking of, here's our guest from this past weekend.
Win. Okay. Hi, Bill and AM. Scrolling too quickly. Loved everything in this one. Looks like Rumple, like Regina, is getting permanently sidelined to the enemy zone. Whatever small steps these two take towards redemption aren't fully appreciated. Since Henry has the heart of the truest believer, perhaps he can be the one who believes in them when all others have fallen short. A scene that I found funny was when Rumple brought home some king's crown for Bay. Hilarious. Should we have recognized it? It would be great if he got it from a character that we know or will meet.
I will say that I really love Daddy Rumple.
Daddy Rumple's hilarious
in this episode, just because he's early enough into the whole Dark One thing that he's not like, you know, precious and cute, and he doesn't have his gimmick set up yet, so he's just kind of awkward.
He's trying things,
and then he's trying to like impress his son at the same time.
And while not letting him out of the house.
Hilarious.
It would be great if he got that from a character we know or will meet. Rumple reminded me of Dad, who went on a business trip and forgot to get his kid a present. So he went through his suitcase and found some crappy work-related object to hand out, like a ballpoint pen.
Or a knife.
Just with Rumple, his job swag choices are more interesting. Lastly, Emma admitted she loves Neil. Woohoo! As a member of Team Swanfire, I'd like to know how your Twitter shipping poll turned out. In our favor, win!
But unfortunately, reality doesn't look like it will be so kind to you of the Swanfire persuasion.
Oh, get over it. It's like a fever dream. I'm sticking with it's a fever
Captain
dream.
Captain Swan. Calling it right now. Neil gets off sometime in the next couple episodes. Hook's there to pick up the pieces. Like, off in front of them. Killed. Done. Bye, Neil.
I want to cry. He's like my favorite character.
You will. And you'll also want to cry when Emma and Hook get married. Nothing makes you cry like a wedding. That's all I'm saying. Okay, and we also got a letter from Allison this week, but we were afraid it was going to make us run a little long, and it was a little long, but it was really good, so we wanted to address it.
Team Anne Marie.
It will be on the blog later this week with a response from Anne Marie herself, so keep an eye out from that. Allison, sorry we didn't get to it, but it'll be there on greetingsfromstorybrooke.com in the next few days. Like we said, if you want to email us, the email is greetingsfromstorybrooke@gmail.com. The Twitter is @GFStoryBrooke. Facebook is facebook.com/greetingsfromstorybrooke. And voicemail, which we love and prefer, and please, please, please voicemail us, 424-274-2352. And we love when you go and review us on iTunes as well, and
yes,
we'll read it on the show. I haven't actually checked it today.
I did. There was only the same ones. We haven't had a review in a very long time.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't think many of you have actually done the reviewing. You may have done the stars, but give us a little write-up.
If you haven't reviewed it yet, just go over there and do it. If you don't have iTunes installed, install it, review, uninstall. Simple as that. Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I'll probably think of something after we're done, but...
Where can people find you, maybe?
Oh, maybe... Well, you didn't... Normally you say that.
Well, I was waiting to see if there was any errata you wanted to get to before we exited.
Nah, again, I'm good. you can find me on Twitter @AMDSimone. Sorry if I get loud. I talk loud on there.
You can find me. I'm at Bill Meeks. I'm putting out an audiobook of my novel that's going to be out around December 17th. You can get information about the audiobook/podcast or the novel at dogboyadventures.com. I found a cover artist this week. He's awesome. It's going to be great. Okay. Well, I think that's about it. So that wraps up another episode. I guess we'll be back on Saturday night
with JG for
our new episode of the Wonderland podcast.
Holla.
But okay, so
until next time.
Until next time. Don't say that. I say that. You did that last week.
That's because you delayed. I was ready to wrap it up.
Until next time.
Greetings from Storybrooke.